Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast from KJZZ's The Show. Each Friday, we review the biggest and most important political stories of the week with a panel of experts, which puts those stories into perspective to help us understand why they matter. Here's this week's episode.
Taxpayers are filing their tax returns today, and those tax returns are on forms that will only comply with the law if we adopt this bill and the governor signs it.
There isn't a problem of confusion because of the forms. The forms are legal, and by state law, if you follow the forms and then the legislature makes a conformity change, no penalties and no interest.
Hospital systems are burdened because of illegal aliens. Okay? That means that American citizens get a lower quality of care because of that burden.
Right now, we know that no personal information is safe from being given over to ICE, who is killing people in the streets, including United States citizens.
Now, this is a critical moment to show this administration that they can't keep undermining the freedoms that generations of Americans like me went to war to defend.
The judge's perspective on that question was, he's a big boy, he's an elected official, you're elected officials, you're equals, you can work this out between yourselves.
It's as if they broke it and they want to blame somebody else for breaking it. These are fragile systems. They're very old systems. They're very outdated systems. And I've been trying to get the resources to have my team fix them.
And with me to talk about the GOP gubernatorial primary getting a little less crowded, more lack of consensus on tax conformity, and more, our former state lawmaker, Regina Cobb. Regina, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
And Don Penich of Agave Strategy. Don, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
So, Regina, let's talk about Karen Taylor Robeson. Yesterday afternoon, she sent a press release saying that she was suspending her gubernatorial campaign. What do you make of the fact that she's calling it quits?
To begin with, I was totally surprised. And I loved the statement she made. I admire Karen and respect her very much. I'm hoping that it isn't anything personal, that it is just what she said, that this is something that, she's trying to bring the party together. If you read between the lines, I kind of wonder if Andy Biggs is getting a little more intelligent and there's a possibility of Karen Taylor Robeson maybe being a lieutenant governor. Mm. That's a possibility. I don't know. But I was floored by it.
In her statement, as you alluded, she wanted to avoid a messy, contentious intra-party primary. Does her getting out of the race achieve that?
I don't know if it does or not. It depends on whether or not Swigert's still staying in the race or not. You know, the rumors out there is that he's possibly getting out of the race. This could be a single person primary. If Swigert gets out of the race and gets back into the congressional race in District 1, then we're sitting with one candidate. So it wouldn't be a messy, primary. I don't think it was going to get messy. I think everybody was still being pretty respectful at this point, but I think that she just didn't want to split the party.
Don, what do you make of the fact that Karen Taylor Robeson, who seemed to have a lane, the conventional wisdom was that sort of the non-MAGA Republicans, sort of the traditional establishment business-oriented Republicans would go to her. Now that she's out, where does that leave the primary, do you think?
Well, I think that we saw in her initial run and in the last recent several months that she was struggling to try to walk that line of the Trump endorsement that she was the first to get, but still also maintain this, like, I'm the more moderate candidate that the general election will be able to, support. And that's a really hard line for someone to walk, for any Republican to walk these days. But I think I was a little less surprised because from one perspective, as soon as Swigert and Biggs started jumping in, I think you really saw a lot of momentum immediately gravitate in that direction of two very established, very talented politicians. A lot of funding was going that way, and it just felt like Robeson was losing kind of that spotlight that she had had before. So I was less surprised by this. But looking at it from, Governor Hobbs' perspective, any incumbent wants their opponent's primary to be as expensive and as messy as possible. And so her stepping out of this, even if the two gentlemen left in don't unite, as the calls for them to do are, it will be less expensive potentially and less toxic with one less person in. And so from Hobbs' perspective, you know, that's unfortunate. You want that to get as nasty as possible over there. And so for sure, they're rooting for nobody else to drop out and for this to be expensive.
But Don, when you talk about money, Andy Biggs is supported by Turning Point.
Right.
So it would stand to reason that money is probably not going to be an issue, even if the primary is ridiculously expensive, right?
That's right. That's right. And that's what I refer to is, you know, he's got that support. As soon as he jumped in, there was this groundswell and financial support behind him, and that will remain.
Regina, do you anticipate that Karen Taylor Robeson will ultimately endorse one of the candidates, assuming that both Biggs and Schweiker stay in? Do you think that ultimately she'll endorse? Because she didn't yesterday.
She did not, but I think she will. Yeah. I don't see her staying out of the race. I think that sure, her influence that she's had up to this point is probably going to be needed. But I agree with Don. It's not going to get as messy. Does not bode well for Hobbs. And you know, we've been saying along these lines that, you know, if it does get messy, Hobbs has a good shot at winning. So hopefully this reduces that for the Republican Party, and they can come together.
So, Don, if you are Governor Hobbs' team right now, and again, assuming that both the candidates who are in today stay in, do you have a preference as to which one you face going into November?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think the general feeling is that Biggs is the stronger candidate of the two, the strongest in the field. And so, you know, Governor Hobbs' team is just going to focus on that general electorate that maybe will be persuaded by, you know, sound clips or transcripts of Biggs having said things in his long career that are too extreme for the average American independent, Arizona independent in particular. You're going to stay focused on, you know, her needing to stop some of the more extreme efforts coming out of both Washington and the legislature. So you're going to focus on her platform and bank and invest that she is the candidate that will appeal to more of that middle, and that they won't be able to get footing with Biggs as the moderate he'll need to pivot to being for the general.
Is Congressman Biggs able to make himself into a moderate, or does he need to be?
No, Congressman Biggs would never be a moderate. And I think that if I was Hobbs, I would want him to be my opponent, because I think there's going to be a strong distinction between the two of them. And if Biggs gets in, it's going to be a lot like with Carrie Lake, the same type of race that you ran with Carrie Lake. I think if I were Hobbs, I would want Biggs, even though he's the stronger candidate. I think that Schweiker could shift that direction. He could go to more.
He's
to a
won
moderate.
Very close races in kind of a swingy district.
He did. Last year it was like I think one or the last election cycle was 1 or 2 points over Amit Shah, and I mean that was really close. So he has won a moderate district. So if I were Hobbs, I wouldn't want to go against that. Hmm. I would probably want to go against Biggs.
Okay. So the primary is coming up over the summer, a little bit sooner for Arizonans. We've got to file our income taxes. And right now, we don't really know what the rules of the road are for filing Arizona income taxes. The state legislature this week passed their second tax conformity bill. Governor Hobbs yesterday issued her second veto of this. Regina, is there any hope for the sides coming to an agreement on what from the federal One Big Beautiful Bill Act Arizona will adopt?
Well, they're going to have to come to an agreement pretty soon here, because the taxpayers do need to know this. This is something we've done every year. We've had to conform every year. This one's a little bit more difficult, I think. And
There's more to it.
It's divisive. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's why it's taking a little bit longer. But they're going to have to. Just like they have to come up with a budget every year. They don't always agree at the beginning, but guess what? They've come up with it. So the taxpayers need to know, and as it gets closer to April 4th, 15th, it's going to be a due D-Day for these guys. They gotta come together.
Well, so, Don, as Regina has said, and she knows from her experience on the Appropriations Committee, yes, the legislature and the governor do ultimately come to agreement on a budget. That, though, can take months to do. Right now, they don't have that time, right? They have to get this done. People are starting to file their taxes now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel it, you know, outside of the political insider stuff, I'm just someone who wants to be able to file my taxes and know that I'm not going to have to do it again because I hate it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the governor has been extremely clear that she is going to continue vetoing these full conformity bills that get to her desk. And I believe her. You know, the tax cuts that she wants to put forward are in the hundreds of millions. They are going to impact a good swath of Arizona families and taxpayers. And I think she's going to stick to her guns. And, you know, Republicans are going to need to look at this year and say, okay, we didn't get everything this year. And they'll need to turn that into a talking point for their own campaign trails that everyone wants to get to because, as you said, their clock has been turned back 2 weeks and they want to hit those campaign trails.
Well, so do you get the sense that there's any give in the governor's stance here? Like, is it my way or the highway, or is there some room for negotiation with Republicans?
Well, there's been some issues out there that, you know, people are saying like Prop 123, so school funding being clean funding and not wrapping in, you know, the private school scholarships, that there are some negotiation points out there. But again, the ninth floor is messaging very strongly, nope, we're not doing it. We are not expanding these tax cuts and doubling the hit to the Arizona General Fund.
Regina, do you think that's a wise stance by the governor to sort of draw this line in the sand? And seemingly so far, it doesn't seem as though there have been a whole lot of talks.
Yeah, I don't think it's a wise stand. I think the public is going to eventually get into this. And the private person is going to say, hey, I can't file my taxes. Get something done. And everybody's going to take a little bit of a hit on this. There has to be compromise. I mean, there's no way that you can just say it's my way or the highway. I think at the beginning you start out that way, but then you have to start moving.
Well, and Republicans have now passed two bills that the governor has said before they passed them that she was going to veto. So I guess both sides really seem to need to get in a room together and figure this out.
Yep. And just like – I mean – We've passed a budget for the last 5 years on June 27th to June 30th because we don't want the – yeah. So it's going to – there's going to be a deadline, and they have to get in a room and do things before that deadline. I think they will.
Don, let me start with you on a new effort by the Arizona Education Association and Save Our Schools Arizona. They're launching an initiative to try to do what they want the legislature to do, which it hasn't, which is to rein in a bit the state's universal school voucher program. Among the changes that they're proposing, $150,000 income limit for eligibility, background checks on folks working in schools, requirements for assessments of students who get ESAs. This is obviously a heavy lift. They have 200,000+ signatures they've got to collect by early July. Is this doable in the amount of time they have?
It is doable, yes. You know, between the amount of volunteers and grassroots folks who are motivated around this issue and the fact that, again, as you said, the teachers' union will bring in some good funding to help with that signature collection effort. It's a tall order, but it is very doable. And I think that they're motivated to do so as those two groups. There have been a lot of headlines about this. We've been seeing this at this point year after year. And so I think to me, the bigger question is whether anyone in the legislature will say like, oh, we don't want to see that happen. Let's see if we can bring back some of the many bills over, you know, that have been introduced that go nowhere. Or is there anything that we can do? You know, we've seen legislatures before put competing measures on a ballot to try to confuse voters. So the story is not written yet.
Mm. Well, Regina, that's an interesting point because obviously if something is voter approved, it's much more difficult for the legislature to change it. Might this be an issue, as Don alluded to, that the legislature maybe does something that's more palatable to them to sort of head it off or maybe put something on that – as you talked about Prop 123, you know, maybe put some of the ESA program into the state constitution.
I agree with Don on this one. There's a lot of the story is not written. And what we look at when we look at initiatives are a good thing. They should be coming from the public. What we've been seeing with initiatives is they're not necessarily coming from the public. They're coming from special interest groups. And I think that that's difficult because when you look at some of the initiatives that we have, they have things built in that we just don't expect. So I think what Don said about them putting a competing initiative out there is probably a good strategy and probably will be seen. And like you said, it could be inclusive of Prop 123. It could be things that the public wants more than they want accountability in the ESA program. When you look at this initiative and it says $150,000 for a family of six, that's not a lot, especially when a mom and dad work. So I think there's some specifics in this that are difficult to swallow. So I think that they're going to have a hard time with this, but I think a competing initiative is what really we're going to be seeing.
Dawn, let's assume that it does make the ballot just for conversation's sake. What do you think the campaign for this initiative looks like? Because there are now more than 100,000 students who use the universal ESAs. And in a sense, you know, you might think, okay, well, it's costing too much. You know, people are buying stuff with this money that they shouldn't buy. But on the other hand, there are also a lot of families who are using this who probably don't want to lose it.
Yeah, that's very true. But there are a lot more families who all they know of this program is the nonstop headlines about fraud, misuse, lack of accountability. And so, I mean, I've been looking at data over, you know, ESA vouchers for several years now. Every single time vouchers go to a ballot in the United States, they fail. Hmm. And I think that this is a sure thing that if Arizona voters get to say yay or nay, it will go down. There might be some details in there that, oh, maybe that 150 should be a little bit higher. But ultimately, faced with a yes or no decision, Arizona voters will vote that they want these regulations, these income caps, this accountability applied to the program. I have absolutely no doubt about that.
Regina, would you agree that if this makes the ballot, we're going to be reading a lot and seeing a lot of commercials featuring things like diamond rings and trips to Disneyland and vasectomy kits and things like that?
Absolutely. That's exactly what you're going to be seeing it's going to focus on that piece of it. Like I said, I hope the voters read through the ballot measure and see, because, I mean, when we raised minimum wage, there was a lot of things in there that the voters didn't know about. And then all of a sudden they were calling me as a legislator afterwards saying, how can I change this? And I'm like, you really can't. Once a vote initiative is done, it takes a lot for it to be undone. And the pieces can't be taken out of it. It's got to further the cause of the initiative.
All right. So, Dawn, that would be in the general election. You guys both alluded to the calendar for legislators. The state legislature has moved up the primary, made it earlier. It's now July 21st, the last Tuesday in July. So that would be July 21st this year. And it's not just the day that people vote. Like, there are a lot of other deadlines that are associated with Election Day. That's all getting moved up. What does that mean for people running for office?
It's pandemonium, I'll tell you that, as someone who is running multiple campaigns right now. It moves up when ballots are going to start to come out, which means that as a candidate or an issue campaign, you're moving up when you need that mail delivered. You're moving up when you need to fundraise to pay for all those mail and commercials and everything else. And right now, what we're seeing and feeling is every candidate, even if they're an incumbent, has to collect signatures in order to put themselves on a ballot here in Arizona. For some folks, depending on, you know, the size of their districts, for some folks that's several hundred signatures, for some it's thousands. So candidates all over are just rushing around trying to collect these signatures with 2 weeks less than they thought they were going to have.
Yeah.
And it's tough. You know, as Arizonans, we have the Citizens Initiative process, so we're used to folks outside of our grocery stores collecting signatures. But when you're a candidate, it's actually tighter restrictions on who can sign those petitions for you and all kinds of stuff. It's a big job.
Yeah, Regina, what are you hearing from some of your former friends, your current friends, but former colleagues in the state legislature?
They're all panicking right now, and especially the incumbents that are sitting there and can't get out and mm-hmm. are working Monday through Thursday and only have Friday, Saturday to really get out and get their signatures. They're having a difficult time, and they're not seeing a lot of activity on the Equal system, which is the, you know—
You can get electronic signatures for your petitions, for candidates.
Yes, and of course, you know, the Equal system went down this last week. That was a panic mode for everybody. It's not just Republicans or it's Democrats, Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever is an incumbent doesn't have that advantage of getting out there and being able to actually get the signatures they need.
Is there a thought that this might sort of, I don't want to say equalize, but maybe give challengers a bit more of a chance against, because typically incumbents, you know, the rate of incumbents who get reelected is usually pretty high. Does this maybe lower that somewhat?
I don't think so. What it's probably going to do is the incumbents are going to start paying for people to go out and get signatures for them. So it's going to cost our campaigns more. So I don't think it's actually going to equalize. I've been saying this for years. Getting signatures as an incumbent is something that it is cumbersome. The public doesn't like it. Once they're in, I think it getting those same amount of signatures again every 2 years is just redundant. And so I honestly, and I've never seen anybody that, you know, we saw last year, I think, someone that didn't get the signatures and ended up fraudulently getting signatures because of that. But for most incumbents that work pretty hard, it's not difficult to get the signatures at the very end of the day.
You still prefer those 2 extra weeks, though, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. When they moved up the primary last time, it was difficult. Now, 2 weeks earlier, yeah. I would be panicking if I were in office.
Don, is there a sense that this might affect work at the legislature for incumbents to not be there Monday through Thursday? Like, could we see them, you know, take one of those breaks in the middle where they're, you know, they come in maybe once a week or take a couple weeks off or maybe even finish their work earlier?
You know, every single election year session, we say, you know, everyone wants to hit the campaign trail. They're going to be motivated to get out of here faster. But like Regina said, nevertheless, we see it go to end of June. And everything that I'm hearing, everyone I'm talking to is saying this is a particularly tense, conflict-ridden session. It's probably going to go just as long, even though they're all freaking out over those signatures.
Is that what you're hearing as well, Regina?
I am. And you know, when you talk about the breaks, I mean, when I was first in office, we never took breaks.
That's a fairly new phenomenon.
It's a new thing. I mean, we didn't get breaks. We didn't get a spring break.
And you're from the part of the state that hosts spring break often.
That's right. I remember my first year in office and they were saying the budget was going to move early. And I said, well, I'm going with my girlfriends on a trip this weekend. And they said, no, you're not. And,
oh,
you know, we'll send the police after you. So
wow.
I'm surprised that they take the breaks that they take. And it's something probably I would think in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll have to leave it there. Regina Cobb, Don Penich, thank you both so much for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Friday NewsCap. You can find the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.